Mediated Conversation on SAFM.
27 minutes now to 9. The time for your mediated conversation this morning. And over the last few months, there's been a series of dramatic incidents taking place in Mozambique, with several groups often referred to, all the media accounts use the same phrase, as having some sort of link to ISIS or Islamic State, taking over some territory in the north of the country. There have been several other groups trying to push this back, and it seems now we have a cocktail involving some kind of Islamic insurgency, I'll put that in inverted commas, mercenaries and soldiers now involved in a conflict in the north of Mozambique. We've seen similar things happening in places like Kenya with Boko Haram, in Nigeria. In Mali, there was a military mutiny yesterday, partly because of what's happening in that country. This, of course, is much closer to home for us, considering that Mozambique is our neighbour. So then, what is happening in Mozambique? How did it start? And can it be stopped? That is your mediated conversation this morning. First, you'll hear from a journalist who's in Mozambique. Isasio Valoy is an investigative journalist based in Mozambique. We'll ask what is being said about what's happening in the north of the country and what is the government there saying about it. Then you'll hear from a researcher who specialises in Mozambique for Amnesty International, David Matsine, will tell you about his concerns for people there. Jasmine Opperman, an Africa analyst at Armed Conflict Location in the event Data Project, often referred to as one of the best possible experts on the subject. And finally, Martin Newey is the regional coordinator at the Southern African Institute of Security Studies. We'll start then with the journalist Isasio Valoy. Isasio, hi, good morning, and thank you for your time.
Hi, morning.
Firstly, what are you being told about what is happening in the north of your country? What do we know about what's actually happening there?
According to several investigations I did and several people I spoke with, the point is there's no clear link between the Al-Shabaab, between what's happening in Mozambique and the Al-Shabaab in Somalia, ISIS, Boko Haram. There's no clear link. In fact, it's an internal conflict with some external links. This is the first point. The second is indeed a cocktail today involving alleged external support, which some of people attributed to ISIS, with the local, I could call it Mozambican Al-Shabaab, which started mainly in the side of Mosima Dapaya, despite having different branches in terms of concentration of the people who end up adhering to this movement of these cells. As I will remember, the first main attack was held exactly in Mosimba, and after that several attacks were held in different places. But in terms of a huge impact, we find out that this year, only for March, with about 3 attacks only being held direct to Mosimba. But we also have to remember about the first attack, which had a huge impact, also was held against Mosimba. I'm not trying to say that the attacks were not or did not occur in different places. As we know, it occurred almost in the north side of Cabo Delgado, starting mainly from Comia, starts from Mosimba, Makomia, Kisanga, going to parts of Mueda, Mwidum, and so on. So, once again, according to what I could find, this conflict has internal origin with external links. There's no clear link between the Al-Shabaabs in Somalia, ISIS, or Boko Haram.
People in your country must be really quite scared. I mean, I think you'd have people being very, very worried about what's happening there.
I mean, everyone is worried, mainly in the north side of Mozambique and Cabo Delgado. We talk about a conflict which for 2017 end up today with about 250,000 displaced people, 1,500 deaths. We're talking about several infrastructure destroyed. We're talking about a humanitarian crisis which we are facing now. And above all, we are looking to all these people who have been displaced who cannot go back to the place of origin. And we're also looking to the side of economic situation of these people, lack of employment and so on, and somehow they become also vulnerable to join this kind of, or to join this group. But the other issue is that by having the insurgents or terrorists, the government is calling them today, because they've been attributed several names since the beginning, and the situation kept going, and today they're called terrorists. The point is that by having Mosimba or the harbor in Mosimba taken by the insurgents, it means that was a major blow up for the government. And it means that there's still no control from the government, and that it's urgent to have a kind of control in order not to jeopardize the regional stability.
Estacio Valoy, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed for starting the conversation for us this morning. But just issues with the sound, unfortunately, a lot going on there. And I do appreciate that you're on the line from Mozambique. So thank you very much indeed for being available. 21 minutes now to 9. Continue your mediated conversation about the situation in Mozambique. David Matsine is a researcher with Amnesty International. David, good morning.
Good morning.
Firstly, what do we know about what's happening to people who are in these areas that are now being controlled by these groups? What is happening to civilians in these areas? Do we know?
What we are concerned about, given the information that we receive from the ground, is the worsening human rights conditions. You will recall that when these attacks began, they targeted villagers, people, and community leaders. There were beheadings. Those were gross violations of human rights by these armed groups. But then we also had the intervention of government forces that have solely focused on violence to bring some form of control in the area. And this intervention has also escalated, the worsening human rights conditions in the area, because the government has been accused many times, so many allegations of the government forcibly disappearing people that it accuses of aiding and abetting the armed groups. We have also seen the government forbidding the entry of journalists, researchers, and civil society representatives into the area to figure out what's happening, to understand, the real situation in which people find themselves in the area. So we see that, there's a deteriorating, human rights conditions. There is no food because people are not producing anymore. Instead, they are running. There is no education because people are running. There is no health, and which is aggravated by the, COVID-19 situation. And we also see that, there is no housing. People are suffering. So the situation of human rights is getting worse by each passing day. Those are our concerns. And we believe that according to the international, human rights, instruments, it's the government's responsibility to ensure that people's rights are protected, people continue to enjoy their rights. But that's not what is happening at the moment, unfortunately.
Is the government actually able to do that? And you mentioned that they'd only used violence as a response, sending in soldiers. What other responses could there be?
Well, a war is not fought on one front. A war is fought also in the minds and hearts of the people. And in fact, that's the most important space where you can fight a war. That means a development project must be put in place, protection of people must be put in place, supply of food, housing, education, health, all those are part of the responses, but this most important part of the response is the one that is missing, with the exception of certain international humanitarian groups and some local organizations that are doing their best to assist the people. But the message that the government is sending by not providing these human development conditions is that, people don't matter. And that, creates further, marginalization and pushing away people you know, towards the side of the armed groups.
I mean, if we go back through history and in other states where we've seen this happen, I mean, it always comes down to sort of the same thing, a lack of capability on the state and a lack of economic growth, and that creates fertile ground for what's happening in Mozambique to happen.
Well, absolutely, because if you look at Cape Delgado, for example, it's rich in mineral resources. And for over 40 years that, you know, Mozambique has been independent, the province has been neglected. You know, for all that time, there's been no development, in local development, no schools, no hospitals and clinics, you know, construction of infrastructures, you know, bridges and roads, telecommunication systems. So people have been marginalized. They've always depended on the land and the natural ecosystems to supply for their needs. Now, with the discovery of these minerals, the government suddenly, you know, shows up, not to bring all, you know, all these, you know, schools and infrastructures, you know, that the community lives. No. But it comes to remove the people from their land in order to make room for these multinational corporations that are mining in the area. That alienated people. That worsened, you know, the human development conditions in the area. And with this war, it's getting worse. So we emphasize that the government must ensure the development of the area, supply all the necessary economic and social infrastructures for people to live healthy and successful lives.
David Matsine, really appreciate the time. Thank you. I know you had to move an appointment to accommodate us. A researcher at Amnesty International specializing on Mozambique. David, thank you. Your mediated conversation continues around the situation in Mozambique and what is happening there. A quarter to nine the time. Jasmine Opperman is an Africa analyst at the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. Jasmine, good morning.
Morning and morning to your listeners.
All right, it's not a great line. I don't know if you're able to move around, but let's just continue and see how we go. What do we know about these groups that are involved in what's being described as an insurgency? Maybe I should go back. Is insurgency the right name to use here?
I think at this point, I'm sorry, at this point in time, yes. Insurgency is the right word to use. I think it's become more and more complex in the world we're living in. To make a distinction between an insurgency and terrorism, as they so overlap. But if you look at the tactics, if you look at the way they are busy increasing their sophistication in terms of weapons and ability to coordinate, clearly we are sitting with four groups in Cabo Delgado, active in different regions with ability to enact a sustained insurgency, and as the previous speakers have indicated, with drastic consequences for a human catastrophe at play in Cabo Delgado.
Where do these resources come from? How are they able to do this?
Local supply lines play a very important role. What we are seeing with the insurgents for the last 2 months is that they are relying on local food supplies. And they have created a sustained period of time, massive areas of ungovernability, of villages left deserted. So you can track the attacks. Where there is food, they proceed with an attack to access the food. In terms of weapons, they primarily reliant on what they can seize during attacks from or with the military. If you look at Mozambique prior, and that is my concern, they have managed to capture massive amounts of weapons. So their local supply streams still remain overwhelming.
I mean, it's incredible the actors here. We understand, have a group of mercenaries. Where do these mercenaries come from?
DAG Advisory Group, very closely linked to Zimbabwe, but there are a lot of South Africans involved. Now, if I say a lot, let's be realistic. We're talking to 20 to 30 crew members because they're relying on choppers. They have extended their contract to the end of the year to provide air support, but they are sitting with massive problems. One, limited capacity. Two, ineffective cooperation with local forces. And one of the speakers have already indicated the atrocities being committed by these forces. And then thirdly, it is time over talk. They have to move closer to the areas as to allow them the time. The main factor that counters them is that they do not have the intelligence. Make a distinction between civilians and insurgency. So when they go in, they shoot, which makes it extremely difficult in terms of making a distinction between who gets killed. I have to admit one thing, Stephen. In the absence of, or with plus one is zero, that they're providing support that is needed, yes. But at the end of the day, the privatization of war does not demand accountability. And that's where the question arises.
Who's paying the mercenaries? I mean, whose side are they on?
A very good question. Many questions being asked. It was raised several times that DAG is actually being contracted by the police in Mozambique itself. And we must keep in mind, Stephen, there are increased tensions between the defense force and the police on command and control in Cabo Delgado. We must keep in mind, Stephen, that there are massive amounts of money at play. And sadly, the history of Mozambique has proven that where money comes into play, officials benefit. And I think a war economy in Mozambique cannot be ignored. Who is paying them? It all fingers point to the Mozambican government. But the question that remains unanswered, who is helping the Mozambican government in paying for the mercenary group?
Oh, okay. And we know it's a mineral-rich area, and we can sort of do the maths from there. The aim of these groups that have created all of this, the insurgency, which is the word we're using for the moment, is their aim just to conquer and to control as much territory as they can? Is it that sort of simple?
No, it's not that simple. When we talk Cabo Delgado, we must understand that the Islamic State is trying to hijack the insurgency, typical to where they are globally, expanding their global reach where opportunity allows. In their propaganda, they like to propagate that they are in charge of an extremist insurgency with extremist religious ideological objectives. But I want to make it clear to your listeners that they are actually, and their position is not one of taking lead within the insurgency. That they present, that they trying to hijack, concern. The local roots cannot be ignored. The discontent with government, years of neglect, we know the story in Africa, is present. To say that they want to control areas have not featured here. They occupy areas. They attack and they retreat. They leave the area completely ungovernable. So what they want to achieve in doing is open to debate with various interpretations. But I've seen a report this week where it was stated that the Sharia law is being implemented in Mozambique de Praia, which was absolutely nonsense. But that this extremist voice is present cannot be ignored.
Jasmine Opperman, really appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. An Africa analyst at Armed Conflict Location and the Event Data Project. In a moment, Martin Newey from the ISS. 8 minutes to nine, your mediated conversation about Mozambique will continue.
Mediated conversation on SAFM.
7 minutes to nine. Continuing your mediated conversation this morning about the situation in Mozambique. Martin Newey is the regional coordinator for Southern Africa at the Institute for Security Studies. Martin, good morning and thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Does the Mozambican state, their military, their police, whoever, does the Mozambican state have the power to stop these groups, to stop this insurgency?
Not at all. And it is not something which is peculiar to Mozambique. So this is not an accusation. It is a statement of fact that no single country in the world, even the most powerful countries, have not been able to single-handedly combat terrorism, especially terrorism in the kind that we know in northern Mozambique, where some of the militants actually came from different countries, whether they were neighboring countries or they were countries far away. But we know that some of the militants came from there, and they have actually contributed to the intensity of the insurgency in northern Mozambique.
Okay, so what should, I mean, it's easy to say what people should do. How do we start? Where do we start in trying to deal with this then?
Look, we missed the golden opportunity when it is possible to stop violent extremism. And that's really at the beginning when they start. You know, the beginning of everything is when you begin to experiment. You don't know, excuse me, you don't know exactly the terrain. You don't know even your strategy. You are still testing everything. That's the best time to really fight and defeat insurgency. But when you leave it for 3 years and the insurgents are able to understand the terrain, they are able to develop and test their strategy and know exactly what works and what doesn't work, it becomes extremely difficult because they have built networks, their supply routes are now well firmed up, everything is now well established. It makes it extremely difficult for a single country and even for a couple of countries to be able to defeat the insurgency. So what I think that Mozambique can do now is really to get the support of all the neighboring countries, Malawi, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Zambia, all of those need to come on board. Tanzania in the north, which is a key one where many of the insurgents came from, build a coalition of the willing to defeat the insurgency. Because if all these borders are closed and tightly control what goes in and what comes out, they will be essentially encircling the insurgents in northern Mozambique. And then we can then look into the interior part of Mozambique to see the supply routes, the look at the network of the insurgents, how they network with other community members, and the routes that they use. Because, look, terrorist supply routes are some of the most complex because they use informal channels. You know, these are sometimes regular routes. People are doing regular businesses, and it is through this that terrorists, depend on. So if we are able to stop all of this, we'll be able to starve the insurgents, you know, of their need, key supplies, and even war materials. So, and this cannot be done by Mozambique alone. Mozambique needs huge support, not only from the neighboring countries, but also from the international community. And that's why we at the Institute for Security Studies decided to press on the Southern African Development Community, SADC, and the African Union to support Mozambique massively, that it has come the critical moment when not supporting Mozambique is itself more serious than whatever consequences could come with support to Mozambique. It is the most critical period because leaving the insurgency the way it is now, it will spread to other countries in the region and become a huge problem.
So Martin,
way bigger than what we have today.
I mean, Martin, you make such a good point about good security at borders. It's going to stick with me, that point. Would that suggest then, I mean, would it be a good thing for South Africa as part of a SADC group to even send some of our soldiers with other nations to go and help the Mozambicans close their border, their northern border, even though it's not, you know, that border isn't directly related to us, But I mean, it would make sense then that we would actually spend money, time, and send our soldiers there and do that, because that would make us safer in the long run.
Yes, you only send soldiers to a place when you understand the place really well, and you have a very good intelligence, because military operations need to be very surgical. They need to be very precise. And what makes military operations to be precise is really intelligence. So what I would have suggested is that let's build up intelligence in northern Mozambique, in Cabo Delgado, to understand exactly what's going on. You know, some of the things that I just explained in terms of how do the insurgents survive? How are they surviving? What kind of networks do they have? Who is supplying them what? Who is supporting them where? The arms, where are they coming from? You know, once we are able to define all of these key strategic issues, then you will send in the military, knowing exactly what the military is going to do. We don't just sit here and say, well, Mozambique is suffering from an insurgency, we're going to send in the military. And then the military goes there, excuse me, not knowing exactly what's happening.
Sure.
That's suicide.
All right, Martin, I'm so sorry. I do have to leave it then. I do apologize. Thank you. Martin Huey is the regional coordinator for Southern Africa for the Institute of Security Studies, bringing an end to your mediated conversation today. Jasmine Opperman, thank you. Africa analyst, Armed Conflict Location and Events Data Project. David Matsine is a researcher at Amnesty International specializing on Mozambique. Isasio Valoy is a journalist based in Mozambique. Thank you all for your participation in the mediated conversation. Why am I talking so fast? You were there, SFM, leading the conversation a minute after 9 o'clock.